Okay, let's get right to it. Containment is the first step in responding to any outbreak of a threatening nature. In this country, unfortunately, we have done not much to really seriously approach the measures that ought to be taken. So where do we start? We go to Iran, which had 50 dead in one town, the holy city of Qom, Q-O-M, I think that's how you pronounce it. We've got Italy now, Milan, completely surrounded apparently by military, all the major roads, roadblocks set up. 10 towns in northern Italy, completely on lockdown. The Italians are making a very stern efforts to try and do something with it. A lot of cases there, but the entire country is in a panic. Supermarkets all over the country running empty and low. And remember, once the trucks stop running, everything stops. And that's what's happened in China. And it could happen almost anywhere else. Dr. Henry Nyman is with us. And Henry, welcome back. It was a, as you predicted, a very busy weekend. Welcome.
Yes, Jeff, it definitely was. And pretty much Friday, it was kind of looking like a tipping point. It was the anniversary of the checking into the Metropole Hotel. It was kind of started the international spread 17 years ago with SARS. And Friday, it kind of looked like the same type of thing where these different areas all outside of China, had some major events. A couple of them were, possibly all three of them were linked to super spreaders. And the physician that checked into the Metropole Hotel was a super spreader. And four of the people that were tourists in the hotel were also super spreaders. And they ended up taking the virus to four different cities in Toronto and Hanoi and Singapore and Hong Kong, and that kind of got the ball rolling on kind of a new phase of the SARS outbreak. And so it's kind of, instead of being the beginning, we're kind of in the middle of the outbreak this year. And it is winding down somewhat in China, which is on total lockdown at Wuhan, which is the epicenter of the outbreak, and has serious quarantines going on.
When you say it's kind of winding down in China, what statistics do you have enough confidence in that would lead you to make a statement that you agree with what some of the government press releases are suggesting? Do you really see evidence of that?
Well, yeah, basically the cases are still going up, but they're not going up as much. Most of the activity was in Wuhan or Hubei province, and they were going up 3,000 cases a day, then it went down to 2,000, and now it's below 1,000. And the deaths have at least leveled off. The deaths got above 100. They got up to about 130, 140 a day, and now they're below 100. And WHO came out today, which was their first news conference since the one on Friday. On Friday, the media sounded pretty negative, and they were talking about the window closing, and they were asking if the window was already closed for getting a handle on the outbreak and preventing it from continue to spread and turn into a pandemic. And so today he kind of had a little bit different outlook. He, number one, said that because of the decline in cases in China, that there was hope that it really could get controlled, and that each of the countries was a little bit different. And China, it was mostly spreading in families, and in some of these other outbreaks, it seems to be linked to religious gatherings, like in South Korea or Iran. And that each one is kind of different, but you know, there's still possibilities to get things under control. And
he actually said that today. How interesting.
Yeah.
Harvard epidemiology professor Mark Lipitch says that 40 to 70% of the people around the world will be infected with the virus in the coming
right.
year. That's his call.
Yeah, well, I think that most of the scientists are in that ballpark, that they've kind of looked at the virus and they look at the R-naught, you know, that it's, you know, in the neighborhood of 4, some are as high as 6.
Six,
some of the
yeah.
low is 3 people mm-hmm. that each infected person can infect. So that's significantly higher than flu, and flu doesn't really get contained. It comes back every season. And then the fatality rate is alarming, especially if you look at the cases that develop pneumonia. So that raises a significant concern. And mm-hmm. and the bigger issue is that in part because of these three outbreaks, because of South Korea, Italy, and Iran, all of which are outside of China, all of which involve community spread, and actually all of them actually involve community explosions, the numbers just grew so quickly in all three of those areas, and they were probably being fueled by super spreaders. And that was one of the things that was missing from this outbreak, is that there weren't strong evidence for super spreaders. The few that had been noted were kind of milder cases. These were people uh-huh. that were asymptomatic. The people that were getting infected were asymptomatic, and they were involving a number of people in each chain, but they weren't really producing pneumonia. I don't think any of the cases actually developed pneumonia. So they were mild, and many of them were asymptomatic. And that was kind of indicating that the assay was good enough to pick up the virus in asymptomatic contacts. And by uh-huh. screening these various contacts, they could identify them. But it wasn't like the Metropole Hotel, where you not only had a super spreader, but the people that were infected were seriously ill. There were a lot of healthcare workers involved. And they were developing pneumonia. In fact, that's all they really kept track of back in the days of SARS. I mean, the case definition involved pneumonia. And for COVID, initially it involved pneumonia. And that would have made this horrendous case fatality rate. So they changed the definition, and they made it as long as you were PCR positive and you had some symptoms, that defined a case. And that was, I believe, to lower the case fatality rate, because the ones that don't develop pneumonia don't die, and therefore they've got a case fatality rate of 0. So when you mix it in with the other ones, they have a fatality rate of 15. You get the fatality rate down to 2 or 3. And that's what keeps on being cited, is this virus being considerably less lethal than SARS. And I don't think that's true if you do an apples to apples. I mean, I know it isn't true if you do apples to apples. They're both in the teens. So anyway,
that's a very high. That Henry, one quick note for our listeners. That's a very high CFR, 15%. If you get somewhere around there, remember the Spanish flu of 1918-19 was 3%. That's the best guess we can come up with. So this at 15%. Is extraordinarily more lethal in many cases, especially elderly people who can get run down and run right into pneumonia, and then they're in big trouble and they're gone. We're going to talk, Henry and I, in this next 90 minutes about some things you're all going to want to hear about this country and where we are. And I'm I want to go back to the China thing. They redefined, as Henry knows better than anyone, their criteria for case counting and identifying at least two or three times in the last week to 10 days. So I don't know that I trust any numbers coming out of China, to be perfectly frank. So, but you don't have to go back there, but that's just my sense on it.
Yeah, well, they did go up and down. They basically used a clinical definition to represent a confirmed case, in part because they were backlogged and they weren't getting the PCR tests done, and they claimed that that was delaying treatment because they couldn't put them into the confirmed category. So they went to clinical, and then they went back again. So their numbers have bounced around. So you're right as far as whether it's going up or not. But since they, you know, within a given definition, there did seem to be a decrease, you know, apart from a big jump and then a decline to kind of make up by throwing the clinical ones out when they didn't test positive. But in any event, he was more optimistic. But one of the more ominous signs, and I'll get into this on the U.S. cases in a little bit, but, I mean, for this one, I don't think they really want to hear from the journalists that much anymore, because in this case, they started a half an hour late, so they basically kept everybody on hold for a half an hour, and then after that, they did their prepared remarks, and they say, well, we're running out of time. We only got time for a few questions. So they ran out of time by having everybody sit there for a half an hour. And then when they finally started, they had a very abbreviated session, and they started out, you know, okay, we'll call on so-and-so. Make it fast. We really don't have much time. And
ever the public servants.
Mm-hmm. Short questions and short answers, and they didn't really want to get into the fact that, A, they think things are much better Monday than the rest of the world, so to speak, or at least the scientific community. I didn't really see a whole lot of optimism on the science side. And then the kicker is they don't want to call it a pandemic because they just don't like the term. So they're not going to talk about pandemic. They're just going to say, you know, they got all these situations that they're kind of dealing with. And pandemic is, it just scares people. So they don't want to talk about pandemics. And unfortunately, that's what they got. And no matter what they say, the virus is out and about in these three outbreaks. Certainly hinted at it on Friday, and it was confirmed over the weekend. I mean, the numbers, you know, kind of are going through the roof, so to speak. I mean, Italy is number one in Europe now, and they're over 200, 231 is the latest count on that. South Korea's up to 829, and they're the largest outbreak outside of China. And then Iran, as you said, some of the reports said there were 50 dead just in one city. Other reports said that there were, you know, fatalities in all the major cities. And then, as expected, in part based on geography, Iran is right in the middle of the Middle East. And with these large numbers of fatalities, there were all of these exports. So last week they had already exported to Canada and British Columbia, as well as in Lebanon. And then today, the Victoria, British Columbia case turned into a cluster because the contact of that person was also positive. So they're up to two in British Columbia. And then Bahrain confirmed a case in from Iran. And then Oman did a case in the morning, and then they did a second case in the afternoon. So they got a couple cases from Iran. And Afghanistan's got a confirmed case and two more that they're investigating. And Iraq has a confirmed case, and Kuwait has a confirmed case. So, and all of these are from Iran. So they, it's clear that the concerns with a big outbreak in Iran would lead to outbreaks throughout the Middle East. And a lot of these countries were reporting their first case. I mean, Lebanon, Bahrain, Oman, Afghanistan, and Iraq were all reporting their first case either Friday or Monday, or by Monday. Actually, most of them were Monday. Most of them just kind of went bing, bing, bing this morning. It was just one right after the other. And so in one sense, that's kind of like what happened with the Metropole Hotel, that it took a week or two, but a week or two after the physician checked in, then he just started getting all of these reports around the world. I mean, most of them were close to China, but Toronto wasn't. And they were just kind of all the same thing. There were a bunch of healthcare workers that were involved, and they seemed to be super spreaders. And somewhat ominously, I just sent you a report. I don't know if you saw it, but it was in Spain. And actually, it wasn't really in Spain itself. It was on the Canary Islands.
Tenerife.
And,
yeah, I got it.
Tenerife. And it was a physician from Italy. And it's kind of like, well, you got a physician who's infected, who's probably been treating patients. And then they go to another city, which is hotbed of tourists. They go to a hotel. I assume he went to a hotel. And
the Metropole 2.0, huh?
Right. And he's sitting there and potentially infecting a whole bunch of people that are going to fly out of the Canary Islands and go to wherever they originated from and kind of spread the virus one more round. So, I don't have the details other than he was positive and he was at Tenerife and he was an MD and he was Italian. I'm assuming he's from Italy. And whether he was treating patients in Italy and got infected, I mean, that was one of the things that stood out from the sequence standpoint. The doctor who was treating patients in Guangdong province for SARS, he had the virus that he had there had quite a few mutations in it. And they kind of just segregated out on the different people that stayed at the Metropole Hotel because, once they figured out what the virus was, all of these countries ended up sequencing the virus from the outbreaks in their cities and deposited them. So you could see the sequences and all of them had, I mentioned before, this 29 nucleotide deletion, but they had additional changes. And those changes, some showed up in one patient, some showed up in another patient. So it looked like they had a bunch of different versions of the virus with the 29 nucleotide deletion, and enough so that you could see these differences, and they were showing up in different cities based upon what version kind of popped up in those patients. But it gave the impression that because he had been treating multiple patients in Guangdong province, he probably had been infected with several different versions of this mutant version with 29 right. nucleotide deletion. Right. And that would lead to the same possibility that this doctor from Italy, if indeed he got infected because he had been treating a number of patients, that they can potentially become super spreaders because they've been infected multiple times. And
And even we know now that people who recover from coronavirus can be reinfected. We know that now from the doctors in Wuhan.
Yeah, and it can be worse the second time around. And so
it usually is, apparently.
That kind of happened with the swine flu. I actually got infected a couple times, although I don't think it wasn't worse the second time. But what I did notice, that I was paying attention to it, and if you recall, it kind of started in the spring. It started in late spring. And
I remember when you were sick. I remember you got both. I remember both cases, yeah.
Yeah, well, that was in the fall. But the outbreak started in the spring, and then it kind of faded a little bit over the summer, but didn't really go away. You didn't hear about it as much because it was actually causing outbreaks at summer camps. And the summer camps, of course, didn't want to say, oh, we got swine flu here. You know, so it was mystery diseases, and they wouldn't acknowledge that they had swine flu. But you'd see these outbreaks come along. And then when school started, that's really what got the ball rolling again. So in the South, they kind of started school in the like the beginning of August, and you can kind of see the cases kind of rolling through. They started in the South where school started earlier, and then they kind of went up north towards the end of August. And here in Pittsburgh, I noticed it because I was expecting it, and the kids all had coughs, and they were sick, but they weren't that sick. And yeah, it was kind of like, well, because I had a couple of daughters that were that were in middle school and high school, and
that's right, volleyball.
And I said, you know, well, there's a lot of the kids that are out of school, and they said, no, everybody's kind of got this crud that's going around, and you know, they're not that sick that they. You know, they're in school, but everybody's coughing. And I was thinking, well, this is just the beginning here, and it's going to take off. And it didn't really take off at the very beginning of the school year. It was just this cough. And kids didn't have fevers, and they weren't going to the doctor. And it was just some crud that was going around. And then kind of in October, it kind of shifted gears, and in October, the kids started getting sick. They had high fevers. They saw the doctor. They were influenza A positive, and by then, the only influenza A that was circulating was swine flu. The seasonal flu had been totally wiped out. There was zero seasonal flu. There wasn't even H3N2. It was all swine H1N1, And then all the schools started making announcements that, you know, the schools had different versions of the same announcement. One, well, there's swine flu in Western Pennsylvania, or there's swine flu in the Pittsburgh area, or there's swine flu in our school district, or there's swine flu in our school, you know, and each one had a different version. They all had swine flu, but they presented it slightly different. But that was an example where they kind of started with a mild version, and nobody really knew what it was because it wasn't really enough to get them to the doctor because they really weren't that sick, and kids usually didn't want to miss school. You know, they got their sports, they were just getting started. So absenteeism wasn't there, and people weren't going to the doctor, and it took about 6 weeks or so, and then the new round came, and they were just lined up at the nurse's office. And the other thing that was weird about it, which is somewhat applicable for this outbreak, is the CDC put out a guidance, and they said that if the temperature is above 100.4, you know, that they should really consider this as potentially a swine flu case. And 50% of the people with swine flu did not have a fever of 100.4. They had a low grade fever or whatever. And there were instances where the kids went to the nurse's office and they had all the symptoms except they didn't have a temperature of 100.4. So they had a sore throat and they were kind of coughing. And so the nurses gave them cough drops and sent them back to class. And so it's the same thing with this. And, you know, the one that stands out is the Diamond Princess. And
what was that name of that ship, Henry?
It wasn't the Corona Princess. It was the Diamond Princess.
I'm going to get you one day on that. You wait.
David Abel was the same type of thing. I mean, he had diarrhea. He was constantly coughing. Vomiting.
Textbook symptoms.
And people, I mean, he was doing videos. So people were watching the videos and they were trying to get a hold of the medical people at the ship. So I think they were calling the U.S. Embassy and saying, hey, you know, this guy's on video. He's got
do something
the virus,
to help him.
You know, can you, you know, basically get him out of there? And they sent the medical teams to his door, and he didn't have a fever. And even though he was coughing, and even though he made excuses for these other things, but I mean, anybody could talk to him for 2 minutes and know that he was coughing, and know that his wife was coughing.
We got to wrap it up. Yeah, go ahead.
And they never did anything. They tested him when it was his turn. When they were doing the 70-year-olds, he got tested, and he and his wife were both positive, and he's got advanced pneumonia now. He's in severe condition. His wife's got pneumonia. And we saw him on the videos with the cough, with saying, looks okay to me. Yeah, you don't have a fever. You're good.
Wow, so, crazy. All right, we have to pause right there. Hold on, please. We'll be right back and continue. Lots ahead. Don't miss it. Let's get right back to business here. Another hour to go, and we're going to bring you a lot of information in this hour. I'd like to start with, if I can, the CDC, which was up until, I guess now, holding weekly news conferences and briefings. And Henry told me today that that's no longer going to happen, Henry. They don't want questions, I guess. Tell us more. Hello, is Henry there? I don't have it. I guess maybe we lost him. All right, let's get Henry back. The bottom line is, there he is. You there, Henry? Oh, no, that means he's off. We'll get him back. Bottom line is, and he'll probably fill us in more, the last weekly news conference was Thursday or Friday, and Dr. Messonnier, that female physician of the CDC who was holding these briefings, announced that they would no longer be holding these briefings. So, Henry, are you back?
Yeah, I'm back. Sorry, I could hear you. I don't know why you couldn't hear me, but anyway.
Anyway, tell us about the CDC and Dr. Messonnier and what's going to be happening from now on. They've made a change.
Well, I was going to get to the CDC.
You want to wait?
Well,
go ahead. You do.
I'll get the punchline and go back. Spoiler alert. This is where we're going. But they're going to just start issuing weekly newsletters to give updates. So I think that's going to replace these teleconferences where they actually have to answer questions. And
we wouldn't want that.
There have been a number of developments that are kind of raising my suspicions, and they all center around the Diamond Princess and how they're handling all of the Americans that are were evacuated, and that's creating a bunch of problems for them. And
I might say one thing, hold on. I got to say this, and you and I, did our first special program on this issue on December the 8th. We did a real good job on it. And one of the first things we did when the Corona Princess issue came up was to call. I suggested it. You suggested it. All those people should have been pulled off that ship immediately, tested and dealt with. But no, they kept him in that petri dish, and look what happened. So we were first. We called for that, and it didn't happen, unfortunately. Anyway,
right. And I think it was February 8th, not December 8th.
I'm sorry. January 8th. Yeah, January 8th.
Okay.
That was our first special program on this.
Right. But that wasn't on the Corona. I finally did say the Diamond Princess.
I knew it.
The Diamond.
I'm going to mark this day down. I got it.
The Diamond Princess, I think, started on February 3rd or so.
We were doing our regular programs by then.
We did the first COVID on January.
That's right.
Correct. So, and just breaking news. They just registered their fourth death on the Diamond Princess. So now there have been four dead, and I think there's well over 30 that are in severe condition. And so this outbreak, as you said, there was no way those passengers should have been kept quarantined on that ship that was teeming with virus, and this passenger was in his 80s. I think all four deaths now are in their 80s. But
I think David Abel is in his 80s, by the way. I think he's in his early 80s.
He's in his 70s, I'm pretty sure. They're actually celebrating their 50th wedding anniversary on this cruise. And he was... I just know how old he was because I know when he was tested. They did the 80s first, and then they did the 70s, and he was at the end of the 70s, and he was kind of wondering whether he was really going to be tested or not. It was the other way around. He was a tester on time, but he was given the results at the very end, and he had interpreted that since they didn't give him a result, that meant he was negative, and I had interpreted that if he was negative, then they got a problem with their tests. But hey, that he was positive, and he was notified at the very end of the notifications for the 70-year-old. So he and his wife are both in their 70s, and I think all four deaths were in their 80s. But essentially, that's who was on the ship. I mean, it was heavily overweighted to those that were 60 and over. I think 80% of the passengers were 60 and over, and many of whom had underlying conditions, and so they were the most vulnerable as far as having poor outcomes with this virus. And it didn't really seem that bad. I mean, he wasn't the only one that were doing videos, but I mean, he insisted he wasn't sick, and his wife said she wasn't sick, and they just had this cough that was due to the air conditioning or something. And and now they both have pneumonia, and he has he was listed as a severe case, I think. That was an example of just how things could go from. As far as they were concerned, he was asymptomatic. They didn't count his cough because he didn't have a fever. But, apart from the cough, he made excuses for the diarrhea and vomiting. But, but that was the overt thing that you saw in the video all the time was that, he was constantly coughing, as was his wife. But, the point is that, they were in a very difficult situation. They should have been pulled. As soon as they got the first result and 10 out of 31 were positive, they knew they had plenty of virus on that ship. There were 3,700 people on that ship. And the idea that they would go in their rooms and stay in their rooms for 14 days and not get infected when they were bringing them meals three times a day, and they that they could go out and walk around, you know, for a certain period of time. And, you know, they were taking the elevator with everybody. And it was just, you know, there were no surprises as to how many people. I think 691 is the last count. But it's really more than that. And that's where I was going to get to. The if you recall, the U.S. ended up taking 329 Americans off the ship. And that was most of the passengers, about 46, I believe, ended up with testing positive for the virus, and they were put into hospitals in Japan, like David and Sally Abel were. And so they're both hospitalized in Japan, along with 44 other Americans. But of the remainder, the majority of them did get airlifted out, and the U.S. was notified that 14 of them tested positive in samples that were collected a couple days before their departure. So they got the result after they had already gotten on the bus, and there was some discussion as to what they were going to do with these 14, and they were asymptomatic, and they ended up deciding they were going to let them come with the rest of the Americans back to the United States. And they had a separate compartment on the plane for symptomatic or those that have been tested in this case. And so they kept them separate on the plane. And there was a lot of concern that, oh, they're taking, you know, infected people with these others. And the point was that anybody that was paying the least bit of attention knew that there were a whole lot more than 14 infected passengers on that that plane. That they had been there for 14 days. They had some of them had been tested much earlier, that, you know, like on day one or day two, so they hadn't been tested for 12 days. And there were new cases every day. And so there was no way they were anywhere near 14 days disease, you know, with no exposure. They were exposed every day they were there. So there were going to be newly infected cases that didn't have enough virus to be positive on the test, but a few days later they would, and a few days after that they would develop symptoms. Mm-hmm. And so it was going to be interesting to see just how many of these 329 were actually infected, because once they're here in quarantine, at least the way they've described it, they're kept separate. You know, I'm not sure. It could be just supposed to develop symptoms or separated. I'm not sure how separated they all are in Travis or Lackland. And so they may not be totally separate. I'm not sure what the situation is. I know in Omaha they're all kept separate, but they only have, you know, 60 beds there total. And right now, I think they've got about 13 patients. But in any event, the question was going to be, there was some concern that there were 14 positives that were coming back to the U.S., but the reality was there might have been 100 positives. And I thought that we would quickly find out exactly how many positives there were. That certainly doesn't seem to be the case. And the sequence of events were that they ended up putting 13 in Omaha. And the 13 in Omaha, I believe, had about 10 of those 14 positives. There were three sets of spouses, and I think that, you know, one spouse in each set had not been tested as being positive initially. So I think they had 10 positives there. And I believe that four of the other four positives were were either at Lackland or Travis, and I believe they were then put into local hospitals. And so all 14 of them were in kind of separate quarantines. They either were in Omaha or they were hospitalized in Texas or California. And I just assumed that they would then go ahead and test the other, whatever, 315, and see exactly where they stood at the beginning of the quarantine to make sure that they didn't have a whole bunch of additional positives that either were false negatives on the test in Japan or had been infected but hadn't had enough virus when they collected their samples before they left and tested them. And so they would test negative, but if they got another sample by the time they arrived, they would see that they had already converted and they were positive because they now had enough virus. And so I was waiting for CDC press release to say, oh, we've got X number of
yes
positives from the Diamond Princess. And
what was the name of that? Diamond. That's right. Thank you.
Yeah,
I get confused.
And they start out not with results for what they've got, but that, well, they're going to change the way we're going to report the results. And we're going to keep them separate. We don't think that they really reflect the risk of getting the disease in any given area in the United States because they were all infected on this cruise ship over in Japan or between Japan and China somewhere or Vietnam. It was a 14-day cruise, so they hit many ports. But in any event, they would categorize them as a separate evacuees from the Diamond Princess, and they would keep them as a separate tally from they actually had three positives that were evacuees from Wuhan, and then they had all of the cases that actually had been confirmed in the U.S. And so they would keep the U.S. ones in one group, and they would put Wuhan in another group, and Diamond Princess in a third group. And they started out with and they would put it on their website, and they would update it Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And so it was up there, and they had, I believe they had 18 positives listed. So it was kind of like, oh, they've already got a couple more than the 14. But it wasn't quite clear if they had tested four and got four positives once they were here, or whether they got another result from Japan, because it was possible that they had collected a few more samples before they left, and they got those results after they had already, left Japan and were actually in the United States. But the number was 18 on Friday. And I figure, well, maybe they want to get them all tested at once and just kind of release the results maybe by Monday, because it only takes a couple of days to do these tests. And it was my understanding they actually had kits in California and in Texas, and they could even test them locally. They wouldn't have to collect the samples and send them back to Atlanta. So I'm kind of looking to see where's the press release, and I got to say how many positives, because I thought they might very well end up with 100, and that would kind of allay or exacerbate those that were concerned about there were 14 on the ship, because there were a lot more than 14
I'd like to move on if I can. I got some things I want to get to, and I know you do too. The bigger story here is the behavior of the CDC. And right now in this country, as far as I can tell, and I think we agree on this, there's really no wholesale testing going on anywhere. It just isn't happening.
Right.
So no tests, no results, no new cases. Everybody's kind of just going about normal business. But we are facing obviously an enormous problem. It's too late. The horses are gone.
Yeah, well, it's definitely too late, but I was going to give you a very concrete example of
please
their
do.
Testing
please do.
Or lack yeah. thereof.
Yeah.
So I was kind of wondering where are the test results for these, because they clearly had 315 cases that they had brought in that hadn't been tested,
yeah.
and there was undoubtedly positives there. And I just thought they were going to test them all. And I went to the website today, and I saw that the 18 had been increased to 36. And so I thought, well, they've at least tested 18 of them. They got 18 more positives than they had on Friday.
Uh-huh.
But why wasn't there any press release? Why didn't they announce we've got 18 cases that are positive from the princess, the Diamond Princess, and that's why
they
we
just
now
changed
got 36.
The number on their website, folks. That's
right.
all they did. They just changed
and
the number.
So they made that change, and I started putting out a tweet. You know, essentially, there's now 36 instead of 18. We got 18 more positives. And I was looking on Twitter, because it'll usually show up on Twitter, and nobody was talking about it. So nobody had noticed that the number went up by 18. And then I heard a broadcast on TV saying, well, the numbers are going up in the U.S. There were six more. And I thought, well, where did the six come from? You know, there's 18 more that are at the website. And if they had six, wasn't there a press release on the six? Where did they come up with the six? And I dug around, and there was a report in the Miami Herald or something. They said that there were six because there was one, and this was in Texas. There were six new cases in Texas, and one of them was from Wuhan, and the other five were from the Diamond Princess. And so we ended up calling around to try to figure out where did they get that. And they said the CDC press conference. I said, what CDC press conference? You know, I pretty much know when they're going to have one. They didn't have any press conferences today. And then I said, well, they didn't really do a press conference. We asked them. They said, send us questions. And we sent them the questions, and they answered the questions. And that's kind of what their definition of a press conference was. And they said that there were 10 that were hospitalized in hospitals around Lackland. And then the 10 didn't really match the 5, so we weren't sure there. He made some more calls. And it turns out that the 5 represent 5 that the CDC had tested. They had gotten, I think, 3 on Friday and 2 more on Monday. And so they had identified 5, but it still didn't add up because they've added 18. And we were trying to get a little bit more information on, you know, aren't you going to test the 315? And then when we asked about testing all of these patients, finding out how many passengers or evacuees, or they technically, a lot of them are patients now, when are you going to test them? And the answer was, well, we're only going to test those that develop symptoms. And if they're asymptomatic, they have a choice. If they ask to be tested, we'll test them. But they have to ask. So, I mean, they're getting presented, well, you guys are here, you're being quarantined, you got to go 14 days, you're negative, you don't have symptoms. As far as we're concerned, you're negative now. And if you're negative in 14 days, you can go. But if you want, we can test you earlier. If you're positive, then we'll start over again.
Start the clock over again.
So not many people are getting tested. And that's the reason they have this small number. I think they've only tested two that are asymptomatic. And everybody else, they're only testing them as they become positive. And therefore, they're really not going to find out how many got infected and are infected and are mixing potentially. I'm still not sure how they're all set up, but potentially exposing the others in the evacuation. So this is kind of Diamond Princess version two. So instead of doing it on the ship, they'll do it on U.S. soil, and they'll do the same thing. They'll put all these guys together. They'll say, you look good to us. We don't see any symptoms, but, you know, we got to check you before you leave.
Oh, man.
And then when they start checking them before they leave, they say, oh, wow, we got 50 of you are positive. Sorry, you 50, you go to the hospital, although we don't have hospitals for you because they're all full. But, you know, we'll see what we can do and get you out of here. And then the other 270, you only got 14 more days. You go 14 more days, you're good to go. And it's absurd. So you're going from Japan, creating a fiasco in Japan, to these at-risk elderly patients that have been traumatized once sitting on a boat full of virus. And now they're going to come to the U.S. and do the same thing with the same results. Because there's definitely positives there. Mm-hmm. And they don't know who's positive and who isn't because they're asymptomatic. Right. And they're pulling them out as they're becoming positive. And
this is
I don't know what they do. Now, it's possible they've got them all separate, which I just am finding hard to believe that they've got, you know, these 300-some-odd people, and they're all kind of separate so that when multiple ones are positive, that they don't reset the clock.
Well, here's the bottom line. You want to know the bottom line?
They do reset the clock because if they don't, they're not really under quarantine. Because the whole idea of the quarantine is that they're there with no exposure to the virus. So if they've gone 14 days and they're still negative, it's not that they've got this low-level infection and it's going to come up again. It's that they're true negative.
Well, not to worry, Henry, because our president has told us today that, quote, the coronavirus is very much under control in the U.S., says Donald Trump.
Right. And you know how you test, how you keep the virus under control?
You don't test.
Exactly right. So they don't have confirmed cases because they don't have any testing.
Very convenient how all those test kits turned out to be flawed, and the states were told not to use them. Very interesting. Yeah. Just happened about 10 days ago.
Right. And they've held off doing the surveillance. They're supposed to be doing surveillance at five cities. And the surveillance is really to look for community spread. And, you know, spoiler alert, the U.S. is loaded with this virus. And
all right, did you hear that, everyone? Please, all of our American listeners, did you hear that? The U.S. is loaded with the virus, okay?
Right.
You heard it first here.
And they're just floating under the radar because they're not being tested, and they didn't all come from Wuhan. There's plenty of countries that have the virus. There's plenty of ways for the virus to get here. They don't have to come on a U.S. plane. They can come on any plane. They don't have to come from China. They can come from Japan. They don't have to come from Japan. They can come from South Korea. They don't have to come from South Korea. They can come from Iran like they did in Canada.
Oh, yeah, or Italy soon.
And now they can come from Italy, right? They come from the Canary Islands pretty soon. It doesn't matter where they're coming from. The virus is everywhere. They just haven't tested. So they did the same thing with the flu pandemic. The flu pandemic, it took 3 weeks to declare the pandemic a pandemic because they kept changing the rules. Well, to be a pandemic, it's got to be everywhere. And to be everywhere, it's got to be in the it's got to be in the North and South America, but that's not enough. It's got to be in Europe and Asia, and that's not enough that they're there. They can't fly in. They have to be community transmitted. So we're just screening the people that are getting off the planes, and we're getting positives, but they don't count because they're coming from North America. So if you're coming from North America and you land in Asia, that doesn't mean it's community transmission because you just came on an airplane. We've got to actually bump into these by accident. So we got to find them without really looking for them. As long as we find them or not looking for them, well, then that's community transmission. If that's community transmission, well, then you got it in Asia, but you still need to get it in Australia. And then if you can get it in Australia, you can get it in Asia, you get it in North America, you can get it in Central America, well, then maybe a little bit in Europe, you get a little, get all that, and okay, then it's a pandemic. And that took 3 weeks. And the only reason it took 3 weeks is because they weren't testing. I mean, they were, it doesn't take time for the flu to fly around the world, believe me. And it's the same thing with this. This virus is all over the place. It's all over the United States. It's not being tested in the United States to any degree. The kits that were supposed to be distributed were pulled back. The starting of the community testing in the U.S., which was supposed to start last week, now it's supposed to start this week. And it's, you know, they're basically looking at a very limited number of people, and that's what the difference is with these big outbreaks. The outbreak in South Korea, they've got a little over 800 people that are positive. How many people do you think they tested in South Korea?
I know, 25,000. Yeah.
Right. They tested 25,000 people to get those 800. How many people have they tested in the U.S.?
It's over 900 now. Anyway, go ahead.
You're right. And how many people have they tested in the U.S.? Maybe 500.
Maybe.
Yeah. So they tested 500 people in the U.S., and they've got, you know, they got 14, 16 positives. And,
I hope all of you clearly see what game is up here. All right.
If they tested 25,000 in the U.S., they would have several hundred positives, and they would kind of know where they were. Right now, they're just kind of saying, nothing here. We don't have any positives. Of course, we didn't do any testing, so you don't have any positives either. So, yeah, what's the problem? So it's a joke. And they're just buying time. They're delaying this. It's ridiculous. And they're saying, well, it's a big deal because they got three outbreaks outside of China. Well, that's true. They do have three outbreaks outside of China. But they're not, you know, that's because the other countries are doing the same thing the U.S. is doing. They're really not testing a whole lot. They're testing, you know, they get a positive. They're getting these cases that are not, don't have a whole lot of virus. They got enough to transmit it. And so they're kind of mild or asymptomatic.
Uh-huh.
The ones that they, their contacts are mild and asymptomatic. You got people say, well, yeah, it's only Chinese that are at risk. You know, that's the reason all the U.S. are kind of mild, and that's why Europe is kind of mild, and that's why. And I said, well, just watch the Diamond Princess, and you know that's got a lot of Americans, got a lot of Canadians, got a lot of Australians, got some from Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those are not Chinese, and they will end up getting this virus, and they're the right age, and they have the right health, that there will be severe cases, and there will be deaths. And there are four deaths now. There are something like 36 that are severe, and those numbers go up every day. And that's exactly who's at risk is not going to have anything to do with. I mean, you got a virus that can affect bats and anteaters, and it's going to distinguish between some genetic background in humans. I mean, if it can jump two species, it's not going to go and pick and choose which humans it's going to infect. It'll take
so
anyone.
This revelation that we're presenting tonight that you just elucidated upon, the virus is everywhere here, all right? Is this a testimonial to the incompetence of the CDC, or is it basically unprepared and they're just trying to cover their ass, excuse my French? What's wrong with the CDC? Or is this an agenda-driven issue that they're trying? Go ahead.
Well, the guy in the White House.
I don't want to get you in trouble.
He got rid of everybody that involved with this type of preparation and surveillance.
He being?
I mean, basically, it's what?
He?
He, yeah. President Trump got rid of the whole department that is involved with this type of surveillance. It's gone.
Do you understand that, friends? Dear friends?
And he pulled the funding from WHO. WHO has said, you know, we need everybody to kind of step up. We got a pandemic here. Even though we don't want to call it a pandemic, we got a fake.
Emergency.
International concern. Yeah,
that's called a pandemic.
Right. And so the funding isn't there. You know, the stock market kind of woke up today and said, well, maybe there is a problem here because our supply chains disappear. And we can't build anything because the goods are made in China and everybody's in their house under the bed and nobody's going to work. So at any event, it's a serious problem. I mean, the early data that came out that showed how easily this virus is transmitted was an indication that you just weren't going to stop it. You know, that basically people do travel. You know, there's students that basically go to school. They go back for holidays, back home on a break. They come back to school. People go on, you know,
over 10,000 of them came back here in January from China,
right,
to school.
Right. And I mean, there's a lot more travel now than there were 17 years ago with SARS. It's a global community. People go around the world. They have big companies have connections around the world and people are going in and out and then the other characteristics, you know, it sounds like it can be transmitted in with patients that don't have any symptoms. So they're asymptomatic and they're not going to show up on any thermal scanner. They don't feel sick. They're not sick. But they have the virus, and apparently they can transmit the virus. So the virus can move around silently, and you're not going to detect them, you know, with an airport check. A lot of people can even have a fever and take a medication and pass an airport check. Others don't get a fever. You don't need to have a fever to have the virus.
No.
And so it's very easy to transmit it. It's got, you know, potentially, you know, I'm not sure about these longer ones, how accurate they are, but you know, they kind of picked 14 days as an incubation period. There's some, you know, data that suggests it might be 27 days, might be 24 days, might be something, you know, on rare occasions, even longer. But if you've got a long incubation period, even 14 days, you know, that's a long time that you can be affected and not have any symptoms and be harboring the virus and then go wherever. And then the virus levels start to go up a little bit. And when they go up a little bit, you get symptomatic. But even if you don't get symptomatic, you can infect somebody else and move the virus around. I mean, some of these long chains that are well documented, the British businessman that went to Singapore and then he went to France he went to meetings at both locations, and there definitely were others that were infected in Singapore, and he definitely infected people in France, and most of those were mild cases. And in fact, the only reason he went to the doctor in England, he had already been to Singapore, he'd already been to France, and he finally saw the doctor when he got back to England, is because he had heard that someone at that meeting had been infected. And so he thought he should get checked out, and he was positive, and some of the healthcare workers that were involved with him also ended up either being symptomatic or positive. And they were all pretty mild cases. And the same thing happened with the business associate from Singapore that went to Germany. The first person had symptoms, but he never developed pneumonia. He had a mild case. He missed a couple of days of work. He was mostly sick over the weekend. I'm not even sure how much work he missed. And then he infected several people at work, but the only reason they got tested was because he got tested and he was positive, so they were contacts. And then their families, at least the press releases, indicated that they were tested and were positive, and they were asymptomatic. So the majority of the people in that chain of transmission were asymptomatic, and they never went to the doctor. The only reason they were tested is they were contacts of someone that was positive. So if they didn't, start testing that series, and I remember that after the first one in Germany that was positive, there was kind of a discussion and say, well, most of those contacts haven't been tested because they're not sick. I think it was a voluntary thing initially. It's kind of, we're offering the test. We did have somebody here who was positive, and, somebody had come from Shanghai, and the virus is definitely here. And then some people started to get tested, and, that chain in Germany alone, I think there were 16 people last time I looked. So the virus clearly could get transmitted. I think it was mostly transmitted by asymptomatic people. And that's been going on for a couple of months now. I mean, these are a couple that you know about because they got tested. The ones that were asymptomatic and affected others, or they didn't even have to be asymptomatic. If they thought they had a cold, if they had a cough, I mean, the guys with pneumonia right now who did videos on the ABLES, they didn't think they needed to be tested. They insisted that they weren't sick. They were annoyed when somebody told authorities or the embassy that they should check them out. They say, we don't need to be checked out. We got a little cough. It was a problem with the air conditioner. We hung up some wet towels. We got the humidity up, and we're better. But I mean, all you do is look at the video and see that, whatever better was certainly wasn't asymptomatic. They were coughing every couple of minutes, and they were both coughing. I mean, it's a tag team that, if one wasn't coughing, the other was coughing. And it was just, it was constant, and it was kind of like, there's a lot of virus on that. Yeah, but one of the symptoms is a cough, and you're both coughing. Why don't you think
just a little bit obvious. Here's another one. Two-thirds of all the COVID cases exported from China, according to this report, this is from the UK, two-thirds of all the cases exported from China have remained undetected worldwide. There may be clusters almost anywhere now. So this goes hand in hand with what we've been saying. Keep in mind that Canada is still allowing direct flights, air flights from China to come to Canada. I mean, they're just asking for this.
Well, it's all over, though. The U.S. just issued a travel alert for
South Korea.
South Korea. And one of the dependents of one of the servicemen over there, U.S. servicemen, has just been confirmed. And they're going to have to end up quarantining the troops over there. or they're going to have to take them home or both, you know. Right. So it's in South Korea. It's in Japan. It's in Hong Kong. And some of these places it's in, and they're not talking. I mean, Philippines, the first case was a fatality. Whenever you have a fatality, it's the first case. It's not the first case. It's the first recorded case.
No. Yeah, right.
And so they're loaded. Indonesia doesn't have any. You know, they've got, I don't know, five or something off the ship that they're bringing back, but those are the only ones they know about, and or at least they're the only ones they're talking about.
I want to play something here when you get done. Go ahead.
Iran's the same thing. Iran's starting out with deaths. The first two there were deaths. Uh-huh. Now they're saying there's maybe as many as 50 dead in one city. And the city is where they're going to be doing the most exporting, because people are going there for pilgrimages, and they go there from all the countries in the Middle East. And that's why they had this long list at the beginning of one country after the other that were positive for the first time. Mm-hmm. And that was... It's not a coincidence. The reason they're positive for the first time is because this is when the first time they're testing them. And the only reason they're testing them is because they've got 50 dead in Iran, which is right next door. And all these people are coming from Iran. So you're not going to stop. You are not going to stop this virus by limiting airline flights. The virus is already here.
The virus has been here for,
I mean, I said to you this earlier, that, you know, you can close a million barn doors. You're not going to get the ones that are out of the barn back into the barn by closing the door. It's over. They are out of the barn. You can't go around and start closing the doors now and think it's going to make any difference. And it's the same thing with this virus. This virus is in the United States. This virus is all over the world. It's particularly places that have a lot of airplanes. You know, it's been moving around for a couple of months now. It's mostly going around under the radar.
Don't forget, the tests weren't
available a month ago. In the U.S., they're limited. You know, they tested 400 people. Big deal. You know, and they're not really looking. They say they're going to look. That got delayed. So they were supposed to start looking a week ago.
Now they're supposed to start working this week.
The tests aren't at the state. So, I mean, that's the thing. They say, well, don't worry about the testing. Just send them to Atlanta. There's no backlog. Well, yeah, you're right. There's no backlog. You've done 400 tests in 2 months. So, I mean, you're doing
South Korea did 25,000 tests in less than two weeks.
And these tests don't take that long. I mean, you do them on like a 96-well test plate. You do 96 tests simultaneously if you want. I mean, 10 tests is one technician. One technician can do 10 tests a day. Yeah. And that's what CDC's a hero. They're doing 10 tests a day. Wow, we're looking really, really hard for this virus. And now we've only found like 16 so far. And we're working at it. And,
it's unbelievable. It's so offensive.
We're going to start doing a little bit more surveillance next week. Next week. We thought we were going to do it this week. But we're going to get it going next week. And oh, by the way, we don't really have personnel. They've all been fired. That wasn't a priority. That, you know, most of the departments in the United States have big vacancies because we don't really need government. We can handle this ourselves. and watch what happens. So
it's bad. But Trump says, don't worry, it's under control. Don't worry.
We've only got 16 positives.
Just don't worry, friends. Right. He's so worried about his reelection. That's what it's all about. Here, this is Miles Guo. I'm going to play this real quick. This is what's going on in China right now. We hear these silly statistics from the Chinese government. In reality, just in Wuhan, there are 48 crematories, 49 actually altogether, and the Chinese government is bringing in now portable furnaces, incinerators for bodies. 40 portable incinerators times 30 corpses a day are being burned in Wuhan.
Yeah.
To 1,200 corpses a day with the portables. The actual incinerators that are in the funeral homes are running at 120 a day each. So he's saying the government is sending in, they're claiming, another 1 million portable incinerators all around the country. Here's just a little bit from Miles Guo. I'll translate it for you. It's because he's just beside himself. This man is exiled from China. He's a billionaire. He's one of China's richest men, or was a Chinese citizen here. What he's saying. I received a call from a friend. He told me he's in charge of an incinerator installation in Wuhan. He told me that he's in charge of this incinerator. By the way, you may want to check the main manufacturer of it. Portable incinerators have been in use since SARS. They literally are moving incinerators. The capacity of each one is 6 tons a day, 30 corpses a day each, 40 portable incinerators. 40 incinerators times X number of corpses is 1,200 corpses a day. These portable incinerators are worked full-time at the Lei Chen Hospital, blah, blah, blah. He goes on, and his point is that they have all these portable incinerators now, plus the fixed funeral home furnaces. They're burning God only knows how many bodies. So the figures are a joke. This is Miles Guo. It's crazy.
You want the independent confirmation?
Go ahead.
You can see them from space. They give off, I think, sulfur dioxide.
Yeah.
And you can see the sulfur dioxide levels over Wuhan. So
it's picture. Yeah, it's a big red signature on this particular satellite.
Squares, right.
And it's
right.
All over the city. So they're burning bodies. Like there are probably hundreds of thousands dead. But the Chinese will not admit it. I understand. I get geopolitics. But the bottom line is, it's a big lie. It's a lie over there. We got lies going on here with the CDC, with Donald Trump. I'm speaking for myself, not Henry necessarily. And it's really disgusting. We have a right to know. That's what we allegedly put these people in office to do, represent our best interests, our birthright. And we have a right to know. But it's too late now because they betrayed us. They did not do their job. Henry, thank you. Fascinating, and I hope all of you out there appreciate Henry's work. He works just as hard as I do, if not harder, and we put it together for you every night. See you tomorrow night, Henry. Thank you.
Okay, see you then. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, I don't think you're going to get any better anywhere else. Back with you tomorrow. Assume that wherever you go, there is a possibility that there is now virus present. If you have masks, I would say if you feel comfortable, you want to take that extra precaution, put them on. And we have a look online. We have a video up showing. I got a new featured story on the right-hand side of the homepage, which has key articles in there that aren't dated. They're very important. There are ways to put on a mask and ways to take them off that you need to understand. So, protect yourself. Prepare. Talk tomorrow. Take care.